Hey, everybody, Patrick Connor here, and welcome to the Knuckles and Gloves podcast. All right, we had to have a return guest because our guest from last time, Lily Ulua of Chicana Boxing, he got hosed. It wasn't fair. We all got hosed. It wasn't fair that that last card got postponed, you know, between Clarissa Shields and look, dude, it sucks. So we just had to have you back. So we appreciate you coming back, but also we had to have our boy Aris Pina, CompuBox operator, back. We're all back together. The gang's back. How are you guys doing?
I'm doing great.
Glad to have you back, Lily.
Yeah, dude, there's a lot of boxing this weekend. Obviously, we were kind of had like a few weeks of drought. There was, it just happened. And in the way that it happened a couple weeks ago too, with the Queen's death, and then everything got thrown to shit. Yeah, I mean, we could literally spend a lot of time rolling our eyes about that shit, for real. But and like slag the lady after she's dead. But the way that that canceled everything was some bullshit, for sure. And the way that everything got thrown into upheaval was whack, dude. We had a good preview. We gave a good preview, and that shit got absolutely thrown upward. But we're back.
Do you guys think that's gonna change does that change who you initially picked? I know you said you didn't remember, but do you think it will have an effect on the fighters that they canceled it? Good or bad?
You know, all right. So I was thinking about this. I don't even know if I brought this up to Pat or not, but so the closest thing I can remember something similar in this regard happening would be, it was about a month ago. We celebrated his 21st anniversary, which was Hopkins Trinidad. So you remember what Hopkins Trinidad, when 9/11 happened, the fight was originally supposed to happen, like 9/13, Pat, or something like that? Like that weekend, I believe.
Yeah, right? It was whatever that weekend was. It was like the 16th or some shit, mm-hmm. Yeah.
So when the tragedy with the Twin Towers, everything, all that happening, going down, they obviously postponed the fight. And with that happening...
I was 8 when that happened, so I'm like, God, and I don't remember that.
Wow, no shit. So you go back and like you think Hopkins just went back to Philadelphia. I think it was because he was just basically that close. He just went home. Tito, who's from Puerto Rico, I think he stood in New York, which is, you know, very similar over there. I mean, not similar. I mean, very familiar territory from over there. But there was a lot of chaos, everything like that. By the time the fight eventually took place, you could tell there was a difference in between who was more fresh and who was a little frazzled, and the result is such. That being said, I don't know if that would happen the same way over here, but you must, you know, you have to take into account all of these ladies were at their absolute peaks in terms of their mental, their physical, everything. They were ready to go. You know what I mean? Like, imagine, you know, the weight cuts that they had to do, the sacrifices they had to make, the game plans that they had to encounter, all the, finally, when they're coming to the press conferences, the bickering back and forth, you know, we were talking about, oh, you won't shake my hand, that bullshit they were doing before, like, you know, it was all kind of come to a head. And then literally having it like, what was it? The queen died 2 days before the card happened or something. And that's just, you know, that's the most gut punching thing. That's really just taking all the air out of you. So
my favorite thing that came out of that is just that exchange with Alicia and Michaela, when Alicia told Michaela, have fun making weight again.
That's right.
She's like, have fun being a broke bitch again. I'm like,
Sorry, man. You know, and they've been keeping it up. And for women's boxing, this is like huge. It's still the interest for this fight's even more so. But I wonder now, you know, especially for the competitors that are from America, because I don't assume that they stood in the UK. I think they went back home, like Mayer and Baumgartner or such, and Shields. And then, you know, they have to come back.
I think Clarissa stayed there.
Do you? Yeah, oh, I'm not. Like, I'm not.
She's not gonna readjust to the time.
Yeah, so like,
that's a crazy time jump.
Yeah, I don't know about everybody else, but I'm pretty sure she stayed there.
Okay, well, that would make more sense, because her opponent's from the UK and she doesn't have to acclimate to anything. Mm-hmm. But
yeah,
I don't know. I'm just gonna be curious to see if they're gonna be able to bring themselves back to that peak again, because it's tough. And when things get canceled and you have to build yourself back to the peak that you were, and now you have to do it in only like a few weeks' time. It's a lot of chaos. So,
yeah,
you know,
I think that the weight making, that's kind of, yes, I think what throws it off the most, in my opinion. I mean, yeah, there's going to be a lot of jet lag if they're going back and forth, for sure. That's kind of fucked up. But the weight making, though, because they didn't even call it off until it was like an hour before the weigh-in or some shit. Remember, they waited like a day. Like they were still on. That was what was fucked up, was that they were still going. And then all of a sudden they were like at the weigh-in and they're like, hold on, we're kind of getting word here. And then they called it off. So, you know, I mean,
it was bullshit. Like they kept on pushing the time and time and other stuff. And like, they didn't, you know, everything was up in the air. This was such a big event. And I'm sure you both agree with me here. Like when they still put on cricket and some other goofy ass sports that still, you know, were able to continue. What something that was invested with all the money that was made for this fight and all the people involved and everything with television and all that, then you decide to cut it at the last second. I mean, no one was complaining, at least obviously.
Yeah, they took it way more great. Everybody involved took it way more gracefully than I thought they would have, and then yeah. I would have.
But I said they would have been
like, I thought Clarissa was gonna pop off. Like I thought Clarissa was gonna
yeah.
say,
especially I would have been like, know, I would have been like, fuck Clarissa, all of you.
How she is. So I was like, oh, she's about to go off, and I'm here for it. But now she's like, oh, rest in peace. I'm like,
yeah, I was
I'm like, oh, so now the PR person gets her phone.
Yeah, I was hoping she would. Yeah. No, I mean, I would have been a dick about it. I mean, I'm not saying I'm better than anybody. I would have been a dick about it because, I mean, that sucks, dude. And that doesn't make any fucking sense to close everything down the way that they did. I mean, and not even just for the fights or whatever, but everything. Like, they were like, fucking, you can't park your bike places, bro. Like, get the fuck out of here. Come on now. It's a little ridiculous, but since we're already talking about it, you know, that's the card that got postponed. That's happening this weekend again. And I mean, you know, between Clarissa Shields and Savannah Marshall, there's already some bad blood there. Like we talked about in the previous preview or some history, I should say. I don't know if the bad blood's really, it's kind of just sniping at one another really. But we talked about this previously. Savannah Marshall has an amateur win over Clarissa Shields, and she's the last person to have defeated Clarissa Shields. And that was, I guess, news and whatever. And Clarissa's kind of seizing on that narrative and saying, hey, dude, that's all you got. Like, that's all you're talking about. That's all your pro career has been. She's the last person to beat Clarissa Shields. And that tells you where we are or whatever, you know, that I'm Clarissa Shields and you're the last person to beat me. And that's all you are. And so obviously now, though, they're going to be fighting for the undisputed middleweight championship. So it does mean something. It does have some meaning beyond their bad blood or history or whatever. So, Lily, I mean, we talked about this last time, but has anything changed for you? Do you think like anything's changed since last time?
No, I actually think for Clarissa's better. Like she was, you could tell that she's been anticipating fighting Marshall. She was the one going over there to the UK to sit ringside for Marshall's fights, and I feel like she's just like ready, and I think she's still gonna win. I want it to be like a clinic, kind of how it was with Hammer, right? Christina Hammer, yeah. Right? Like, because Christina Hammer is pretty good, but Clarissa just toyed with her, and I would love that to be the case with this. And I know you mentioned that Marshall's power. But I think, you know, even though Clarissa has been down before by Hannah Gabriels, I think she has a decent chin on her. And I think she's going to, you know, the going to the MMA, I think that helped with like punch resistance too. And I think she'll be fine. I think she's going to win. I just want it to be like, I want her to embarrass Savannah Marshall over there in the UK. That'd be the best outcome for me. As for Alicia and Michaela, I don't know. That fight's like 50-50, maybe 65-45. I'm going to lean towards Michaela just because I feel like she's been, you know, she has that win, she unified. So I think I'm going to go with her, but I don't really have like a preference. I just want it to be good. And I know, I think given how they trash talk each other, it should be good.
You know what I was thinking about? And I didn't even realize this till the other day. And I just thought, I just got a chuckle out of it though. Cause like I was looking at Clarissa Shields, like on BoxRec, I was looking at her record, and so go back a handful of fights, go back two fights, and Marie-Yves Dicarry, you know, the young lady that she earned a decision over last year, she's gonna be fighting Natasha Jonas, for, you know, the unified junior middleweight championship, in a couple weeks, and they're making a big deal out of that, and I was kind of just like, you know, I'm not trying to become like a massive Clarissa Shields fan or anything like that, but you know, they're talking Dickery up, and then she gets basically whitewashed by Clarissa Shields. Mm-hmm. And then she goes on to, now they're going to be doing the unified championship. They're like, woo, 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 you know, like that didn't even happen or something. And so, I mean, it does seem to kind of be a little bit of a difference in terms of how things are getting covered and how things are being reported. And the fact that also Clarissa Shields isn't really being embraced all that much in the U.S. And maybe that's kind of, you know, Eris having to do with why she's going over there to the U.K. and why she's kind of, even though the reaction has been similar, like, God, what's her problem and stuff like that? Why is she getting in Savannah Marshall's face? Mm-hmm. At the very least, they're paying attention, you know?
Totally, man. Clarissa Shields, from the very beginning of her pro career, she's always been the type of person that's always been fighting for what she felt, what she's felt as injustice in terms of the respect that she hasn't gotten, and respect for women's boxing in general. And like we discussed in the last show, women's boxing has grown leaps and bounds from where it's gone from the very beginnings of it to where it happened in the 90s with like basically the crash television era and how women were exploited, not just in boxing, but in every sport in general, and how everything was portrayed. And over the years now with, in all sports now, especially with boxing, how the skill level has evolved so much and how these women have evolved. And now these competitive fights have been able to come on, the Olympics, you add all these different things that have happened. It's pretty awesome. So all that being said, Clarissa Shields was one of the pioneers though, from this onset. She was the first one when Olympic boxing had women involved for the first time. She was the star from the U.S. team of that. There was only how many divisions at that point? There was only a handful. And she becomes the first like two-time Olympic gold medalist. Already though, you can see why she's feeling injustice and pissed off, because every time when people talk about, you know, when the media was talking about Olympic boxing, what were they always saying? Oh, we haven't had an Olympic champion since
Andre Ward.
They're still saying that.
They're still saying
that.
Andre Ward just the other day corrected Joe Tessitore like a week ago on that broadcast where he was like, Andre, you're the last Olympic gold medalist for the U.S. And he goes, for the men. And I was like, Jesus.
You know, and that's the thing. There's still, you know, with everything that's happening, there's still that fighting. And that's what Clarissa is, you know, has to fight for. And so her attitude though, because she's very like you said, the biting, very, you know, not afraid to say, speak her mind and say for what she believes in. A lot of the male dominated sport of boxing is not used to that and that type of attitude, and don't want to hear that.
They're not used to it from women.
Because that's what I'm saying. That's what I mean.
You know, like a lot of them are like that cocky, and of course they get their fair share of hate, right?
Lloyd
was like that, and he got hate for it. What's his name? The one that they call the monster, but Berlanga, right? Like they're the Teofimo. So they do catch obviously backlash too, for people are like, oh, you need to get humbled or whatever. But with Clarissa's like, not a with different just, like, type. Yeah. And also like you mentioned, people do get, you know, mad at her for being snappy, but she has to beg for things that are just formally known to other people. Like Lomachenko, how much so he became champion, like this many fights. And she's like, can y'all just mention me? And then people get mad at her like, oh, the nerve on this bitch to ask to be also named in this. Like,
and they always have to bring up, they always have to, and this is their main point, is that they always have to bring up, well, it's women's boxing. Look at her division. I can, you know, there's a top 10 in the junior lightweight division. There's only 10 people in her entire division in boxing.
So she moved down. So she like moved divisions and shit to shut people up, and they still wouldn't shut up, you know.
And it's the skill level is there, man. I don't care how thin the roster might be, or if it's not as dominated as the male sport, it's still incredible. It's an incredible accomplishment to become a two-time Olympic gold medalist. Do you know how fucking hard that is to do?
That's like, in the world. Like, yeah, like all the participating countries.
Yes, that's an accomplishment that stands on its own. And if she was to retire just on that merit, her name would still be ringing bells more so, you know, off of that than most of the women that are still champions today. So, yeah, she deserves her flowers, man. She's still going to fight about that. But, yeah, you know, a lot of the writers, well, there's a lot of, I'm not going to name them by name on here, but a lot of them on Twitter and other stuff, they've taken, who have followings. I think it's hurt her as well that they've over the years have bashed her and had their followings, of course, jump along tattoo when they don't get along. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I know who y'all think, like, so with that being said, it is tough for her, but she's at a point now where this is the biggest fight of her career. She has expanded. Like Lily mentioned the last show, she's moved on to MMA and tried to do other things to like really just bring over, you know, some kind of respect, and also make more money, recognition, whatever you want to call it, everything as a whole. And it's come to this point. This is one of the biggest women's boxing cards I can, off the top of my head, I can ever imagine. And they're in the main event of it. And she was willing to go to the backyard of Savannah Marshall to do this. So, like, yeah, this is huge. Huge, huge.
Yeah.
All that being said, I remember the last show, I picked Shields to win. And I still think Shields is going to win this fight. And I don't know how convincing it's going to be. I think it's going to be relatively close. And she's going to have to really, really put an exclamation point on it to get a decision in Marshall's backyard. But that's who I like. And I'm not going to go too much into the Mayor Baumgartner one because we talked so much about it the last one, but Baumgartner is absolutely yoked. I did not notice that until recently. Like, she's jacked. Okay. Like,
I want her to crush me.
I mean, so that scares me. I don't know, man. Something about that power says that. Like,
She's developed a lot. Like I mentioned it when we did the other preview, that she actually followed the boxing history account a few years ago, and I noticed her, but I didn't know anything about her or whatever, you know. And she I remember she had gotten a knee injury a couple years ago, and she was talking about how she wasn't sure if she was going to be able to keep boxing. And also on top of that, like if you follow her on social media, kind of similar to Clarissa Shields, like she wears her heart on her sleeve. She tweets some of the randomest shit, you know, like, I mean, whatever, I do too, whatever. But still, like she's definitely very outspoken as well. And she's developed a lot as a fighter too. She only has 13 fights, and she had it wasn't a bad loss, but she took a loss by split decision a couple of years ago and has bounced back really, really nicely. And then Terry Harper, who was undefeated at the time, I mean, stopped her standing with like a scary knockout, like, you know, almost like disconnected her circuits type of shit, enough that was definitely eye-opening, and caught a lot of attention. And then Michaela Mayer has obviously had a lot more money put into her career, and I think that's part of the narrative, that pre-fight narrative going in, that Alicia Baumgartner has had to maybe work a little bit harder, or at least a little bit more undercover than Michaela Mayer has. Michaela Mayer has definitely been pushed much harder, definitely been had more of a promotional push behind her. And so you see that a lot, not just in women's boxing, but in boxing in general. Fighters get resentful and kind of, I don't know if you want to say jealous, but they get pissed because they feel like, well, I had to come up the hard way. You know, here's this motherfucker over here with all this money behind them, and they're not having to do anything for it. Like, what the fuck? And so, I mean, that also can develop a certain attitude that can show in the ring, and that has seemed to show in the last few fights for Alicia Baumgartner. So if she does show up, if that fighter does show up, you know, Michaela Mayer is maybe a little bit more polished, but she better not get hit too much.
And like I think I mentioned the last show too, man, she has a tendency sometimes, if she's going to get hit, and she's probably going to get hit in this fight, she doesn't like, she will stand and trade to the detriment of her coach and everybody else. She's not afraid to get into a firefight with somebody. She did it with Hamadouche.
Yeah.
And that was a hell of a fight. Oh my God. That fight was awesome. And Hamadouche, obviously, no discredit to her, but she clearly doesn't have the pop that Baumgartner has. Mm-hmm. So if Baumgartner and, you know, the massive arms of her are able to land one of those bombs, I mean, who knows? You know, it could be very, very interesting. I don't think we've seen Mayer actually really hurt. We've seen her kind of stunned, you know, a little frazzled, but not like actually hurt. So it should be interesting. If she does get her, if Baumgartner is able to really jump on her and, you know, has the finishing touch to be able to do it, or if Mayer is going to be able to have that grit to get in there and, you know, battle back. It's a fascinating fight. It's a really fascinating fight. And the fact that it got canceled, we had it made a month, it made it even more salivating for me because of everything involved in it. You know what I mean? Mm. Even though it sucked that it got canceled originally. So.
Well, I'm happy that they kept the card, though. I'm happy that they didn't try to, you know, push it back or try to retool it or some shit like that.
Or put it in an undercard somewhere. Like, I'm glad. Yeah, that's huge.
No, it's still, like we've said a couple times, women's boxing has really been developing quite a bit. And I mean, that actually kind of is a slight side note here. I noticed that recently there have been a discussion about, like, you know, talking about what the fight of the year could have been and whatnot. Is it you know, could it be Katie Taylor and Amanda Serrano and whatnot? And then the subject has already been brought up. Well, we need a separate women's division for fight of the year now. I'm like, isn't that kind of the opposite of what we're wanting to do?
Separate,
isn't that,
but
isn't that a step back?
You know, I'll say this, Pat. I was lucky enough to have attended Katie Taylor, Amanda Serrano at MSG, and, you know, no bullshit. Like, I've been blessed enough to work a lot of fights there and seen a lot of fights there, and that was one of the best atmospheres and best fights I've ever seen at the Garden. And a fight like that, I guess, in my opinion, I'm saying, just deserves itself for to stand on its own if it's going to be a fight of the year. And you can't, and not.
It's very much in contention, dude.
Yeah, and it really much is. And, like, you know, that's not to say that's not to discredit Fundora Lubin or Conlon against Wood or, you know, other barn burners that we've had this year on the men's boxing side. You know what I mean? All those fights were incredible. But if you're going to put them head to head, that Taylor Serrano is
don't shortchange the men, because they've been the men have been shortchanged for far too long.
Yeah, right. Jesus. But I'm just, that's all I'm just gonna say. Like, I mean, you can't that atmosphere was fucking wild that night. And you know what was the best part about it is that there was nobody really beefing. Like, people were arguing, but they were, like, friendly doing it, the fans. They weren't, like, actively trying to whoop each other's asses like you do at other fights, where I've seen at Barclays and at MSG. People were just being cool.
You know what I like? I saw that people were taking pictures in Irish pubs around the town, and they were like, oh, come here and watch Katie Taylor versus that other bitch, or things like that. And I'm like, oh my God, like, you know, the little chalkboards that they have outside. I love that. I'm like, that's so cool. You know, like, here, I hate that here in LA, especially if it's a fight on the zone, like, it's rare that you're going to find anyone who's showing it. Like, it's so rare. Even with just regular boxing pay-per-view, it's very rare that you can go to a place and watch it.
Totally.
So when I saw that, like, multiple bars, multiple Irish pubs were, like, repping KT, I thought that was so freaking cool. Like, definitely they have, like, such, like, the Irish and New York have such a great boxing culture. That's why Conlon would always fight over there too in New York. And that, oh my God, I want to witness a fight there so bad. So bad. So hopefully soon I can go to a card over there. I just hate flying, so that's a...
I've told Pat about it countless times. Like, MSG, for whatever reason, for me personally, is like, it just has an aura to it. Even if it's not even boxing, you go see a Knicks game, or if you go see a concert, whatever it is, just walking into that building, you see that giant ass
classic
ceiling.
Venue. Yeah, the ceiling is iconic, dude.
Yeah, it really is. And you just, there's just holds a lot of history in there for various things, but boxing is just different, man. Like, to witness a fight at MSG is just magic. Even if it's a really shitty card, it's just, you're in there, you know? It's the guard. You have to witness one, so.
Yeah, it's just that, that's definitely been a boon for women's boxing this year, no question. Katie Taylor and Amanda Serrano putting on such a great card. But then again, you know, this weekend should be, at the very least, out of the two fights, should at least get one interesting one and potentially one action-packed one, I'm hoping, anyway. But I guess we'll have to see what happens. I guess I'm pretty sure last time I picked Clarissa Shields, and I'll go with that too. And last time I'm pretty sure I picked Michaela Mayer by decision, but I think that I'm probably going to go with that, just because I think that's probably what will happen. But I'm hoping for the other result. We'll have to see.
All right, but with all that said, let me just bring up this other thing really quick. How are y'all feeling about the Queen's belt?
Oh yeah, that's a good point. I would have forgotten about that.
I had to bring this up. I just had to, because the WBC is at it again, you know.
And I have something to tell you guys, because I don't know if you guys remember, Macintosh Ross was like saying that he wanted people to pitch stories at him, and I'm like, hey, like, I would love to do one on like the WBC, right? So the WBC website, when they created this belt, I was gonna post it on Twitter, but I've been so busy with work, I forgot. I asked him, like, hey, like, how are the belt that they gave Triple G Canelo? It was like another commemorative belt for like indigenous people in Mexico. I forgot which group they picked this time. But I'm like, hey, I'm like, I would love more information on how you compensate the communities that make you these belts, or that these belts are inspired.
So it's not just exploitation.
Yeah. Absolutely. And they replied to me and they said, well, we paid, well, they don't have any fees. These are not sanctioned, so there's no fees. I'm like, and they're like, but we pay, we match up with organizations and give them money. And then the second time when I went to write back to the comment and I'm like, I would love to know more information. Can I DM you? I'm like, is there a specific people, a specific group? Like, does anybody who makes it? And when I present, it said the WBC has blocked you from replying to them.
No shit.
And I was like, damn, like I was just asking, like, damn, goddamn, all right. And I sent it to Corey. I'm like, Corey, what the fuck? I'm like, all I was asking was literally like, how are these people, you know, how are they compensated?
Yeah.
And they're like, well, but these are not sanctioned. And I'm like, but how are they compensating? Like,
that's the question. That ain't what I asked.
That's not even answering the question. They're like, we're not taxing them. They're like, oh.
And with this one, it's a similar sentiment, right? Like, I always felt weird that they did those belts between Canelo and Triple G, because arguably people think Triple G won the first two fights. So it's like, why would Triple G, even though, you know, he was mimicking that whole Mexican style thing, why would he want this? It's like they're already being like selected with who they want to win. And with that one, why would a black woman want a belt, that's commemorating like the queen of colonization? Like, why would you want that? I don't get it. Like, it just makes no sense. Like you said, Pat, they're just opportunists and they're trying to make whatever flies and whatever's going to be popular. But it just makes no sense. I love the color. Purple's my favorite color.
I will say the whoever they got actually designing the physical belts is doing a great job because they look beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not even the point. You know, it's like you got to ask the question, what about these groups? What about these indigenous people? Do they want to be represented this way?
And the way that they spin things, because I remember, you know, I'm from Miami. When they did the Huichol belt, I think it was for the first Canelo Triple G fight. And the WBC was not even involved in that, from what I remember. And they really wanted to push this belt. And, you know, I was like, who made this belt? And everybody, and the WBC, when Canelo was like, I'm, you know, back when Canelo was mad at the WBC and not doing shit with them.
He was like, I ain't taking that shit.
Yeah. And the narrative there was like, oh my God, Canelo's such an asshole. Like, he doesn't want the Huichol belt. He fought, you know, in Tepic, Nayarit. He is an amateur and as an early professional, he fought a lot in my home state. So people were like, that was the narrative. And people who don't know about boxing politics and boxing organizations actually believe that Canelo was rejecting this belt because it was a Huichol belt. You know, he's a white Mexican. So people, the indigenous people, like everybody in Mexico, in my state, I mean, thought that he just didn't want the belt. And it was like, no, guy, he is just his beef with the WBC. But the narrative that they try to create with these belts is like so freaking random. To like just to help themselves. It's really weird. And again, I love the belts. They look beautiful, but it just seems like almost irrelevant. Like, what are you
doing? Especially when it's for every single fucking fight now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it doesn't make it special.
Like, they were doing it like kind of selectively, it seemed, for the first few times. Okay, you see one pop up here or there, and then you would kind of forget about it. But literally now, it's almost any fight that they can think of, they're going to go drop one in it for whatever holiday or whatever thing they can commemorate it for.
Well, I told you, like, they did that one, the Pearl Belt, for, like, Amir Khan's return.
Samuel Vargas. Yeah.
Like, this is not even a title fight. This is Amir Khan we're talking about and Samuel Vargas. Like, what is going on?
The belt they made for Charlo, for all these other ones. This belt now that Tyson Fury apparently wants to fight for against Chisora. I don't know, man. The WBC, Pat, like you and I DM each other all the time talking about all the bullshit us and Corey about the psychopathic stuff they do, and it's just wild, you know.
All I know is that they got a lot of employees, dude. Because if you look at all their social media, they got TikTok, they got Instagram, Twitter, mm-hmm. Facebook.
And they got a bunch of accounts like WBC whatever the fuck. Like,
and it's all streamlined where they got all this shit. You know, they're slapping the WBC fucking PVG on that bitch on every goddamn photo they come across. Yeah, there's posts here, posts there, video here. They're taking shit there. So obviously they have a lot of employees and shit that they're paying to do all their social media and all their other shit. And they're obviously commissioning these people to make the belts and blah, blah, blah. So, you know, this just overly produced. This, all of this shit is thought through. This isn't by accident. These people, you know, they can claim all this shit about being nonprofit businesses and all that type of, you know, whatever. They're having a goddamn annual conference in Cancun every year, like, you know, and it's like this massive banquet that's costing probably like $2-5 million. It doesn't make any sense. What they're
also
claiming
in Acapulco, they just have in Acapulco, and I'm like,
or Puerto Vallarta, or yeah, some like, fucking like resort.
Are y'all making these commemorative belts? You know,
it makes, yeah, and then you're going to this resort that's people, exploitative of the indigenous population.
Exploitative of them, and yeah, exactly. It's like, what are your values? Because you're, it's like a band-aid. It's a band-aid solution. It's like just a facade. Like, you are claiming to care about these things, but you know, specifically harm them by doing these big events and not, and again, I just wanted to know what compensation they received. But I did see, Addis, in the DM you sent me, it did say at the bottom the person of who it was. So I'm like, no, I'm gonna Google this person and see if I can contact them, because
okay.
Or see if I can contact anyone, because I'm like, I really want to know how much, if at all, they paid. I'm pretty sure they paid them or whatever, but like, it's not just paying them for their labor. If you really want to honor them so bad, like, give them money too, and give them resources, and give them, it's a band-aid thing. It's a facade.
Absolutely.
I
don't know, man. It's just ridiculous to see, like, that. I don't know. I always get annoyed when I see Mauricio with his selfies and always posting up when they're like, when you see these interviews and the stuff that, and the answers that they give people, it's the type of thing that I hate more than anything. They like to talk a lot, but they're not actually saying anything.
Yeah.
They're just giving you words.
Like politicians.
The reason why we have this belt is because the commemorative value of the people of boxing is so great that, see, when you look at the history, it's like they just start going into shit. It's like,
but basically,
wow.
Pat, like, when I was watching Richard Pryor comedy the other day, and he was talking about how from years ago, and he was explaining how his kids were trying to, like, explain how something got broken and they weren't saying anything. Well, I'm going to tell you how it happened, okay?
Exactly.
Listen, so...
Exactly.
You're not going to believe this. It happened, but it didn't happen, all right? And so, blah, blah, and you go for a 10... And that's how it happened.
Mauricio's great at that shit.
Yes, you know what I mean? Like, he just go from some bullshit, and it's like, no. And it goes from him, it goes through it from his dad. And the worst part about these guys is that if you meet them, they can get you wrapped around their finger quickly, because they just know how to talk to you and know how to swindle you, make you think that they're good people. You know, Lily, I think I told you recently, like, one time I met Don Jose, I've told you this, Pat, too, a long time ago, when somehow he got inducted into the Boxing Hall of Fame. And not to veer off really quick, but that really shows you there in perspective how people are pissed off that Jackie Tonawanda got in, but they would vote for Jose Suleiman, and I even bat an eye about it. But
yeah, despite spending an entire career talking shit about him in print, an entire career, and then vote for him.
Yes, exactly. Anyways, he gets there, and when I'm there helping out with the fist casting and I'm talking to him a little bit, this dude had me, and I'm a very skeptical person. I don't trust anybody. And he, one of the seconds, he had me thinking he was the greatest person in the world. Oh, blah, 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 man. Yo, man, you're beautiful. This, and let me tell you about the past fighters. Oh, you love Salvador Sanchez? Kid, let me tell you some stories on Salvador Sanchez. And then I'm just like, wow. You know, then 2 seconds later, like, he leaves, and I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, what the fuck just happened? This dude totally just brainwashed me.
There's positions for people like that. There's business positions for people like that. My boss is like that. Like, she has you at the palm of her hand within 5 minutes. And I'm like, God damn, I'm trying to even talk to people. And you got people who, you know, perfect the art of just wrapping people around their finger. Mm-hmm. Must be nice.
I was like, yo, I need to go take a walk and, like, go eat something, man. What? I just need to, like, break down exactly what this guy just did to me.
It's very salesman-y, dude, for sure.
Yes.
And that's precisely why they can't be trusted, because they're always lying. Yeah,
I you know, that was just one. It's like, and you know, to be honest too, like we've said, as shitty as they're, all those belts are beautiful. This one, beside, I know you said you love the color, Lily. I think it's a little bland, compared to the others they built in the past. All right, they could have done a little bit more from research.
Really,
really
wanted-
well, what are they going to put on there? The stolen artifacts that they have in their museum?
Sorry, right? Yeah, you're right. Yeah, I had no idea.
Jeez. That's because it's that WBC white belt, bro. That they could put raisins and mayo on that shit.
Bland.
Raisins and mayo.
Oh, geez.
I'm going to take a snippet of this and post it on my Instagram. This is hilarious.
That was awesome. Okay.
Motherfuckers. Yeah. No, look, dude, it's going to be, it should be a good card. At least one of these fights should win out. At least one of these fights should give us something. But let's take it from lovely England all the way down to Australia. Okay. All right. So George Kambosos, he kind of failed us a little bit this last time. I'm not going to lie to you guys. I was expecting more.
Kind of?
Not that he lost, because I think a lot of us felt like this could be a one-off type of thing with George Kambosos, right? Like,
with Devin Haney?
No, that he caught lightning in a bottle with Lopez, that he on top in the first place. I don't think a lot of people apart from people who were like Australian, we're expecting him to defeat Devin Haney in the first fight, just based on what they look like in the ring, generally speaking. And so I'm not trying to slag George Kambosos, but he obviously, that's what he showed in the first fight against Devin Haney. He almost like he didn't belong. And so, the question, I guess, is going into this one, number one, I'm not going to lie, I'd even forgotten this shit was happening this weekend until a few days ago. Embarrassingly, I should have known, but at the same time, it's really gone under the radar. But also,
would you say it's going down under the radar?
Bam! Ooh, boomerang that at me right there.
Okay, that was corny. I'm sorry. Go on.
No, it was good.
Boomerang that shit.
It has gone under the radar, though. I compared to the other fights, even compared to the Wilder fight, in my opinion. So, is that the fact that Kambosos just did not do well in the first fight, and that's pretty much what everybody's expecting here, and then we're just going through the motions because this was what was contracted?
I don't think that deserved a rematch. The scorecards were fucking wild. Now that I remember one of them had it like pretty close, one of the judges, I think.
Damn, now I'm going to look because I don't remember.
I don't remember, but I think I do.
Oh, yeah. Both of them were 8-4. Two of them were 8-4. Yeah, no.
Yeah, and that was like... No, I think the thing is with Kambosos is that because with... Teofimo became so unlikable to people that they don't see that it was kind of a one-off, right? Like, it was... Teofimo's not in the best night, in the best mental health. And they saw him beating, and even though it was like a decent fight, they saw Kambosos as a legitimate winner. And he was, he was. But they don't take into consideration anything else because Teofimo became so unlikable that they just don't even process that. But with Devin Haney, it's like, he made Kambosos look just outclassed completely. Like you mentioned, like he doesn't even belong. And that's why I am happy that he said that if he loses, he'll retire, because I don't think I would care to see Kambosos against any of the other guys at 135. So that's okay with me. I think it happens again. I think I'm hoping, just for the sake of entertainment, that Kambosos does come up and does try to exchange a little bit more, does try to take more risks. But I just see Devin Haney having the same type of night, especially now with the boost that he beat him already.
What do you think, Aris? I know we talked about this apart from the show, and I had mentioned like, hey, dude, Haney Kambosos too this weekend. And you were both kind of like, fuck. Like, it just kind of crept up on us, I guess. Part of it too, like I said, the postponement of the women's card, that was definitely like, we were all looking forward to that. And so that getting moved to this weekend, that kind of overshadows some stuff for sure. But what do you think about this fight?
I don't think much of it, to be honest. I'm going to be straight up. It's one of those, sometimes there's reasons that are in positive for an immediate rematch. And then there's others for a negative that become negative for an immediate rematch. And this is one of those reasons. This is one of those examples of it. you know, like look at like, you know, Chad Dawson and Antonio Tarver when they had to have an like a rematch soon after that. Like, why was the first fight? That first fight wasn't competitive. They needed to have a rematch. And the same thing with this one, with Kambosos, when he beat Teofimo, like, yeah, he caught a ball, he caught like lightning in a bottle immediately. People that he basically threw the lightweight division, you know, fucking like crazily right there. Like everything just went wild for a minute. He was the champion, and the way he was talking, all this stuff, he was ready to accept all these challenges, yada, 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 all this stuff. But we know the way boxing goes, the fights that he wanted to be made, the fights that were supposed to be made, obviously are not going to be made. And then eventually when Haney, who was what, anointed as the paper champion, people called him because he got the WBC belt that way. He eventually, you know, he's the mandatory challenger. And it was like this back and forth bickering. And so when the fight, when all this shit happened, it was like, you know, the buildup of it, the back and forth talk, the controversial comments that Kambosos calling him boy and Haney.
Oh, yeah.
That was bad, you know, to DiBella's credit. And he said that Lou and others, like, you know, kind of like brought him along. It was like, bro, you can't talk like that. And he like chilled out. But that combined that with Haney's dad not being allowed to go to Australia originally and some other shit, like, There was a lot of variables that made this fight originally like really exciting. And you're like, man, you know, when you thought Kambosos, considering how he looked against Teofimo, he would bring that same, you know, intensity in this fight. And instead, Haney controlled it, and he controlled it easily. And he did it without even like really having to exert himself. Like most of it was just off of his jab. You know, when we get it, like the jab is the most important tool in boxing, and Haney has an incredible jab. And when it comes to like the basic fundamentals, man, he's better than almost anybody at the game. But Kambosos, I don't know, he seemed like he was caught between styles that first fight. Like he was trying to box, he didn't really know what to do. Like anything, nothing he tried to do worked. And Haney was just using his fundamentals and wasn't even exerting himself to do it. So I can't see anything he did in that first fight being able to do that in a rematch. Like, he just showed his ceiling at that point. Kambosos is one of those guys, like any fighter, and it's happened throughout history, where a guy who you don't think he has a talent to beat someone at the elite level ends up pulling it off. But then they immediately lose that fight in their first.
He's got that Al Bummy Davis quality to him.
Exactly. You know what I mean? Within the first few like fights, and then they go back to just kind of being like a middling contender after that, man. And then soon after that, they become like a stepping stone because they have that name, and dudes start whooping on them. You know? Yeah. It's the boxing cycle. And I almost feel like that's going to end up being like that for Kambosos, because I don't think he's at the level of, he clearly showed he wasn't at the level of Haney. Shakur's moving up. He's definitely not the level of Shakur. Ryan is still a question mark because we don't really know about Ryan still, you know?
But you're totally right. You're totally right, because it's cool to say, hey, I beat a former undisputed champion than saying I beat Kambosos. Like, yeah, you know, like you don't have to, you know?
And then Tank also, you know, they're like all the, so I'm saying like the elite guys that everybody calls the new kings or whatever the fuck they want to call them. I don't think Kambosos is at that level.
They got to fucking fight each other first.
They have to. That's what I was going to get at next, is that like this fight is a pointless mandatory, like pointless rematch that happens, but it's happened in boxing. But once he gets away with it, I just hope that Haney, and he shows the ambition, all these guys talk with this ambition, that they end up fighting each other. Like, think about this, you know, Lily and Pat, sorry to like get wild, but like the potential for these fucking fights right here, you know, we got Tank, you got Jesus, I just said his name a second ago.
Garcia, Tank, yeah.
No.
Shakur? Lopez.
No, Shakur? He's moving up the way. Shakur, excuse me.
No, Shakur Stevenson, yeah.
Shakur might be the most talented out of the group. He's moving up to lightweight now because he clearly showed he can't make 130 anymore. You got Tank, you got Garcia. This could be a golden age, but we're at this point in boxing when none of these guys fight each other and all they do is bicker on Twitter.
And what's crazy is that, like, the amount of money that those fights would make and the amount of eyes that would be in the, you know, but there, I don't know what it is, I hate that, but yeah, fight each other. Like, supposedly Ryan and Tank are fighting, but I would believe that shit once I see them both walking into that fucking ring.
And I don't believe that either, because they're just saying that on social media, you know, not to compare, and it's easy to compare this to the golden age, because a lot of people on Twitter do this with like the welterweights from back in the day, right? But at least they fought each other. Sure, were there gaps in time? Would I have liked to see Sugar Ray Leonard and Tommy Hearns fight after 1981 closer in time than 1989? Absolutely. But at least they still ended up fighting twice. Durant and Leonard, like, all these guys ended up at some point mingling. What we've gotten so far now, and all these guys are still young, but they're getting older, is that they're just bickering online and going back and forth. And it's almost going to happen to, we might get another Crawford and Spence situation where Crawford is 35, Spence is 33, and these two motherfuckers are still just, and we don't know what's going to happen. And like, this is the state of being a boxing fan and why people get frustrated. We have all these immensely talented fighters at the top and they can't fight each other. And it just takes forever, you know? Yep. And it's God. So it's bigger than Haney Cambosis too. This fight's almost like an afterthought. And that's why you and I, Pat, probably forgot about it. Because I forgot about it.
I didn't know that it was this weekend.
This is how we all, you know, because it's like, it's one of those fights that's like, we already kind of know the result after the first fight. We see what's going to happen now. But as Haney is the undisputed champion, is he just going to kind of wade in the water like Josh Taylor did at junior welterweight? Or is he going to get like these challenges that someone's going to step up to fight him? That's what I just want to see. Sorry again for ranting. I'm just.
That's why we're here.
No, that's what we're here for. For your rants. Nah, man, the only thing I can think of for Cambosos is that, like, maybe it was such a big occasion, it was a big to do in Melbourne in their first fight. It was a big, you know, we even did like a greatest Australian fighters of all time show and stuff like that. I mean, not because we were like, oh my God, but mostly just because we like to, you know, do keep up with what's going on in boxing. But at the same time, it was almost kind of, part of that narrative was like, oh wow, look at, they're bringing this platform again to Australia, and this is going to hopefully open the door again for like another kind of revival of Australian boxing. And it actually has. There's been a number of bigger cards in Australia since then, which was only a few months ago. But I mean, you know, it can only do so much. The only thing I can think of is that the size of the event or something, maybe it got to Cambosos, maybe he froze up, maybe, I mean, that's all I can really think of. Because apart from that, the only other answer is really just that Devin Haney's just better and that Cambosos is not on that level and that the same thing's going to happen again. You know, and so the only thing I can hope for, like you said, Aris, is that it's just a better fight, that he can find something, that he doesn't get stuck between styles and just says, fuck it, and goes after him. Because, I mean, what else? What are you going to do? Like,
He should just do that.
I know it's like so much easier said than done. You know, like we say that shit as fans all the time. Just get him. You know, like meanwhile the fighter's like getting punched in the face. Like, fuck but you, the you thing get him.
Like, but like, dude, what are you gonna have that type of power to where you would be?
Yeah, yeah. Are you just gonna take that for 12 rounds or like just fucking get knocked out in four? Then I mean, I don't know. I mean, what the fuck?
To Haney's credit, he has such a style that, like, for whatever reason, you know, he can make a guy just break down like that. You know what I mean?
Get right
and just do that.
And I probably shouldn't focus too much on Cambosos too, because Haney did do his job. He kicked ass. Yeah.
And it's just doing it with the basics. Like I said, man, not to be harked back and sound like one of those old timer crusty guys. Guys don't use the basics enough.
Crusty.
Yeah, it's true. But like, that's how they do. But if you just use a steady, good jab like Haney does, and Haney has a very sharp jab and it uses combinations after that, same as Shakur, and the reflexes, defense, most guys are not going to be able to handle it. And yeah, you know, their styles, they just get stymied. They don't know how to break through. And I mean, Haney's not the most exciting guy. If he ends up fighting Shakur, that's not going to be for, you know, the bloodthirsty fans.
No, it's going to be a tactical.
Very much so. But I mean, that's going to be one of those fights that you're going to want to show students years from now, hey, this is how it's done.
But also, like with all these fights this Saturday, I feel like this fight, if it's any like the first fight, it's just gonna be a forgettable ass fight completely.
And that's what I almost think that's what's gonna end up being. Like, I think Cambosos is gonna bring in a little bit more. He's gonna try. I feel, you know, it's back in Australia again, but it's gonna be rinse and repeat. If Haney even gets like slightly, you know, wobbled or something, I'd be surprised. But I think he wins another, like, you know, 117-111 decision. And I say that 117-111 as given the judges saying, given, like, you know, some more of the benefit of the doubt as opposed to what's actually happening in the ring.
Well, the only other good thing on that card is that we got the Maloney brothers fighting, Jason and Andrew Maloney.
Always
but You know, so there might be a little bit of fun on that card apart from the main event.
That's the ESPN card, right?
Yeah, I think so. Pretty sure.
All right, Matt, before we move on, how nervous is Tess is going to look this show?
He's always got this fucking face. All right, everybody, we're here at ESPN. The guy looks so nervous all of the time. I feel bad for him. I don't know what's going on in his life, but I hope he gets better.
It's a lot of personalities on that broadcast booth. You got him looking nervous. You got Tim Bradley very excited all the time.
Always eating some sandwich.
Eating something.
With his crumbs.
Yeah, I'd be like over there, like, you know, like dipping my head off the camera, eating a sandwich or some shit.
Andre Ward just kind of just sitting there trying to just, you know, trying to gather
talk about his own fights.
Yeah.
With his belt. With him, yeah.
Yeah, it's dude, there's definitely, I will say it's better than the DAZN team. That's for sure.
That's so bad. Besides Corey, I'm like, Corey, they need to put you in everything.
Of course. Just replace the entire team with Corey. Are you kidding me? Get out of here. Yeah, no, it's, but they do have a funny team. The top ranked ESPN team does have a funny team. At least it's entertaining, I will say.
It's entertaining. The first time, like during when they were doing the bubble fights, and when Tim Bradley very excitedly was like with the food in his mouth, eating a bacon and Brian.
And then he goes,
he's like, "There's a B&B sandwich, bro."
Oh man!
And you see Andre Ward just half disgusted, half confused, and he was like, "I want nothing to do with whatever Timothy Bradley's talking about."
Yeah. Dude, it was when everybody was getting sloppy, dude. Like, it was the fucking worldwide pandemic and potential collapse was on the menu, and people were like, I don't know, dude, but I'm staying in my motherfucking PJs, dude.
I would do lives, like, weekly lives, just in my pajamas, drinking wine, and, like, so that's probably, like, the most views I ever got, like, just sitting fucking drinking.
Yeah, everyone just quarantine,
we're not doing anything.
People just needed, like, to be comforted. Big
fights,
that's it.
Like, old fights that wouldn't get copyrighted, I would put them on, like, how my TV is right here, and we would be, like, watching them together. I'm like, oh, yeah, but talking and watching, drinking. I'm like, damn, the first, like, 3 months of quarantines was okay, but after that, now it's just sad.
Thank God boxing came back, though, during.
Yes! I love the Thursdays fights from ESPN. So it was Tuesdays and Thursdays, right? Or Thursdays.
It was around there, yeah, because I, you know.
I love that.
After watching the 1,000th view of De La Hoya Trinidad on ESPN that they would put on, or whatever, Chavez, like
Tyson, Jaco, or some
shit. Mike Tyson, or some other fight that they just refused that. You know, it was nice to get some live boxing for a change, because I mean, my God, but yeah, interesting times.
The free TV channels, I just want to let y'all know, whoever's listening, the free TV channels, like with a smart TV, usually has like any app with free channels. They have a channel just for old boxing fights. Just putting that out there. Yeah, I don't remember the exact name for it, but there's a lot of old fights, and it's just playing old fights all day. So check your smart TVs for the free TV apps, because they definitely have that.
Interesting.
But I guess the biggest fight of the weekend, though, that we're getting to compared to everything, would be the return of the King, former King.
Is he the main event? Right? He is, right?
He's absolutely
Deontay Wilder, yeah.
Oh yeah. Definitely. He's definitely the main event. Yeah.
Yeah. So probably the biggest fight, both in terms of weight and in stature. I mean, I guess it could be argued as far as the, you know, Shields and, well, Shields Marshall maybe, but I guess that's a little bit probably bigger in the UK than it is here. But nonetheless, at Barclays, you know, Deontay Wilder making his comeback. There's a big story to that. You know, a lot of people want to throw shade. A lot of people want to talk shit. A lot of people want, dude, mainstream journalists apparently want to say, welcome back, but you suck.
You saw that this morning? Yesterday morning, was it? I'm like, can I have my coffee first? Like, before I reach some. It's like the similar thing with Clarissa, I think, and it's just, you know, black men. Like, it's just black people, period, that they get this treatment, because it's like, as a journalist myself, I could have came up with way better ways to write that headline, like, oh, you know, Wilder comes back, but he's yet looking to cement, you know, his legacy or whatever. Why would you write it like that? Like, that was so fucking weird. I get it is more clickbait than it is like trying to be an asshole, But totally. Also, you are trying 100%. To be an asshole. Like, it's both, but I think it's more of just clickbait.
It is.
But that was really weird. And I think with Wilder, you know, I get that people are frustrated about his, the whole cheating allegations. And I get that people are frustrated because I was frustrated. I'm like, oh, Wilder, come on. Like, just accept defeat and train. Like, that's all you got to do. But, oh, my God, like, he got like really
but you can do both but you can do both you can both be in my opinion you can acknowledge that the shit that the excuses he was making after the Tyson Fury rematch, the costume,
yeah,
you know, the gloves, etc., the water yeah. You know, there's all sorts of things, and you could acknowledge that those are pretty, like, some of them they range from fucked up to stupid.
Yeah.
You know, like putting the blame on Mark Breland is fucked
up. That's fucked up. That's,
you know, the gloves and the water.
I was over that shit.
Yeah, getting drugged, the costume. Those are just stupid.
Yeah.
But, and so you can acknowledge those are fucked up, but then you can also acknowledge that the reaction to those things were also kind of along racial lines.
Yes.
That a lot of fucking of the white media was like coming down on that shit when it's like, you know, it's the, like you said, it's the same type of shit with Clarissa Shields, and people are like, she has the audacity. Oh my God. She's saying that she's the greatest. Bro, get fucking used to it, because every fucking fighter does it. Get used to it. Every fighter thinks they're the best. Okay. And if you can't accept that, then settle down. I don't know, because every fighter does it, but you really seem to react the strongest when black fighters do it. Why is that?
Also, the thing is that, like, a lot of people are like, Fury fans, and I don't get it. Like, Fury, I feel like you can be a fan of his style and the fact that, you know, he's so awkward and is able to, you know, school.
They like how he looks into the camera and sweats profusely while on cocaine.
Like, I feel like people who like enjoy him as a person and as like, you know, him outside there, it's like liking fart jokes on Nickelodeon. Like, that's for like kids. Like, the Dawson stuff was funny here and there, but like, he's just so an unlikable person, in my opinion, that it's like, you have to have like third grade humor and laugh at fart jokes to like think that, you know, Fury is so fucking funny. And he's, to me, he's just unbearable and unlikable. I appreciate that he's who he is as a fighter, but like, people seem to forget that he took like PEDs too, that he popped positive for PEDs. People forget about that. And they just glamorize him off this, you know, win against Deontay. And I get it, like, those, I, in my opinion, I think Deontay lost the first fight too, you know, but I feel like, okay, give the man a chance. Wilder has only lost to one person, and that is Tyson Fury. Like, I don't think that should completely eliminate him, and, you know, from contention with everybody else. Like, it's just, you know, obviously we have to take in consideration how his mental health is going to be. And if those excuses, he was just like, no, I did all the right things, I'm not going to train as much. But he did make improvements. Like, we saw that in the third fight. I think his legs were just giving out on him, and he shouldn't have came in heavier. But I think with him, it's like, why are we treating him like he's just like this disposable guy just for losing to one guy? Yes, you can argue he lost all three times, but that's one guy he lost against. There's still a whole division that's going to make great fights. And I think this is going to be a great fight. And I kind of want to see a typical fight with Deontay where, you know, like Adi said, like, you're going to put him down within like three rounds. Or was that you? Was that you who said that? Yeah. But I kind of would rather see Deontay at least for like, show us what he's been working on, you know, like, give us a little bit, you know, a little bit of what you've been working on, and then knock him out. I would love a like Brazil type knockout. Right? Was Dominic Brazil was his name?
Yeah.
I would love that for us.
The thing, you know, Wilder, the thing that's fascinating about him is that, like, I'll ask you both this, Pat, first, you. Where do you consider, is Wilder the hardest puncher you've ever seen in your life? So for me, how I say it for this, right, is that in terms of prime, I think Wilder might be the hardest puncher I've ever seen in for prime, like in my lifetime. Reason why I say that, like, I was a fan when Mike Tyson was active. I was a fan when Julian Jackson was active, but they were both clearly past their best when I was able to witness them. Like, I saw Mike Tyson knock out some schlebs, but, like, you know, that was Mike Tyson way. I didn't witness him, you know, like, terrorizing Vegas and upstate New York. You know what I mean? Those poor guys that had to go through his wrath. Julian Jackson, the same thing. I caught him at the very tail end of his career, knocking a couple of guys out, but I didn't witness him, you know, detonating nukes in the Vegas desert back in the 80s. So Wilder, I've never, you know, he has that type of power that, like, he just, he can turn a guy that's 250 pounds into pancake batter in a matter of seconds. It's incredible, you know? Like, yeah, I mean, look at Brazil, because Brazil, that totally happened to. There's one right hand and he just splattered like it was, you know, like silly putty or some shit. Like, it was wild. And it's fascinating because, like, the thing about Wilder too is that, like Shields, they've had scrutiny their entire career. Shields not so, Shields differentiates from Wilder. I'm gonna go on a little bit here, but like Shields differentiates from Wilder and the fact that like Shields is because of her attitude, like we said. That's what's getting everyone her, you know, people hate her and all this other bullshit. Wilder, he's been under a microscope because he's one of the last American heavyweights you can think of from way back when. And when he turned pro, I believe so, Pat, you can probably correct me if I'm wrong, he was the only medalist from that class, even though he won a bronze medal, right?
I think so, yeah.
So as a heavyweight, he wins a medal, and then he turns pro. He turns pro on a golden boy. This is like the early...
Yeah, stuffed bar on the undercards until there's like 20-something
and
so,
And so what's interesting is that very, very early in Wilder's career, he was actually featured on television because there's this narrative that like Wilder was always hidden from the very beginning, then he got suddenly brought on. No, he was featured a couple of times. Mm. And he looked like shit because he was just a guy that was, you know, straight up from the scraps. The fact that he was able to win a bronze medal was remarkable in itself. But like when he was put on national television, when he clearly wasn't ready, and then you had old fucking crumbling guys like Teddy Atlas going, look at this motherfucker, what am I watching here? Oh, yeah, you know, and just bashing him. You know, like to Golden Boy's credit, like it's easy to bash Golden Boy or whatever, but they have great matchmakers. Eric Gomez, who's I think president now, but he was matchmaker in Wilder's earlier career. And I don't know, I forgot the other matchmaker's name, but they got good matchmakers and they built Wilder from scratch. Like they put him in the back end. They didn't make sure they didn't put him on television. Yes, there's videos that have come surfaced over the years, like Wilder fighting that really weird obese guy. And you know what I'm talking about, Lily? Like that video and him like jigging and dancing the whole time while he's swinging on him. And it's,
yeah,
it's awkward. And thank God that wasn't on television because people would even go, what the fuck, even back then. But it was good because he was off of television. He's building himself. By the time now, he's finally slowly getting featured on like Showbox, knocking the hell out of Sergey Lyakovich, giving him, you know, making him have a seizure, you know, knocking out other guys. I even worked a couple of his early fights back then. You know, it was brilliant matchmaking. By the time he finally fights for the title and he beats Stiverne and he goes the distance, you know, it was still easy. Everybody's always saying, oh yeah, his first defense, you know, watch this now. He's going to be built up like cream puffs, everything like that. He's always just had this stigma. And it's kind of like it's to a degree, I get it. Like, you know, with how he was built, but like, this is a guy that was built from scratch. Like Chavez Jr. was built from scratch. Other guys who don't have extensive amateur careers, you got to build them from that and do that. This is the beauty of matchmaking. You know, if you go all the way back to the 50s and shit, dudes who had 100 pro fights weren't getting a title fight until then. You know what I mean? So like Wilder being built up is nothing new. It's just boxing.
And he also has nearly 50 pro fights now.
Yes. And you got to give him credit too, man, whether you like him or not. And it's easy too, because like you both said, he's made goofy comments over the years and said shit that like can make you a little leery about him, you know, saying he wants to catch a body and saying other stuff, not wanting to, you know, it's like, but you got to give credit where credit is due. He's come a long ass way. He's really come a long way. And I hate how he dumped Breland because Breland had nothing to do with that. You know, Breland really worked well with him. JD's is a fucking useless idiot, so I don't, whatever. But Breland, you know, that thing, but like him working with Malik Scott clearly, you know, is a guy, another one that's kind of eccentric, a former pro and stuff like that, but he clearly fine-tuned Wilder to do some things now, especially in the third Fury fight that we saw.
Yeah.
The way that Wilder was jabbing to the body, jabbing to the head, other things that he was doing. If he can keep on working on that, that was only their first fight together, am I right?
I think so, yeah.
Yes, it was.
And he's looked pretty good in the gym too, like in the last few weeks, in my opinion.
Yeah, you know, I think there's still like a lot of, I think there's still a lot of story to be written on Wilder. And you know, with all that being said, with the story that I'm not going to mention the writer's name, but like the story that we both, what we all mentioned that came out earlier this week, he's not a Hall of Famer. He is already. All right. Is he a first ballot? Like, are there other guys, you know, more eligible that should have been in years ago? Yes. That's always going to be the case over the years of boxing. Absolutely. But Wilder, you can't deny what he's had done, man. You know what I mean? He put up the numbers. He's done the different things. He's come up from this, the fights that he's been involved in. His story is still not done yet.
Yeah.
Probably going to get in. And then when you had these idiots on Twitter earlier this week trying to compare, oh, well, you know, if you put Jerry Corey's resume next to him, you put Ken Norton's resume next to him, he doesn't compare. What does that mean in the whole grand scheme of things? Right, Pat? Right, Lily? Like, what does that mean?
To answer your earlier question, he probably is the hardest puncher, dude. Because yeah. I mean, he puts large fighters, you know, either to sleep or just totally fries them. And I mean, that in and of itself is just, it's massive. You know, it's the biggest punching heavyweight. But then also, yeah, dude, there's been an intense scrutiny around his entire career, without question, from the very beginning. And it's really difficult to deny at this point that he has come a long way. It's tough to deny that he's come a really long way. And as far as the Hall of Fame angle, dude, I mean, it's like, it's difficult to discuss before his career is even done. But even now, it's like, dude, you want me to start saying blasphemous shit? It's like, what have fighters like Rocky Graziano done, you know, overall in their career? Like, they participated in a great trilogy. So did Deontay Wilder, by the way. You know what I mean? So it's like, you already, if you're looking at the merits of like some of the other fighters who are already in, which for some reason is unfair, you can't do that. You can't say, well, if so-and-so is in, well, then blah, blah, blah. It's like, that's an unfair argument, I guess. Whatever. I don't see why not. The precedent has already been set as far as what it takes to get into the Hall of Fame. And so if you think that Deontay Wilder is not deserving, I don't think he's nearly as far off as many people believe.
Yeah.
I think he's close, you know? So yeah, dude, I think that it's nonsense. Like we've already said, a lot of people criticize him and hate him for reasons that are not logical and not fair.
All right. So let me ask you both this too. So, I mean, I don't even think we mentioned Hellenius after before this. The reason, I mean, it's kind of remarkable for him to be able to get to this point too, that he's in the pay-per-view main event. If you think about even a few years back, him getting knocked out by the likes of what's that guy's name? The guy that Wilder knocked out. Everyone's been beating him up.
Gerald Washington.
Yes, poor Gerald Washington. Yeah, you know, he's like a gatekeeper, right? So you got. I mean, from Hellenius has been around a long time, if you really think back. I mean, I met this guy, Jesus Christ, back in like, Pat, I don't even know if I told you this. He went to the Hall of Fame when he was like feeling, when he was kind of hot, back in like 2010.
I remember right after he beat Attila 11, and that because I knew who Attila 11 was, and I remember he beat Attila 11, and they started pumping him up and stuff, and I was like, oh, he's really tall, so I mean, I guess let's see what happens if he's skilled.
Attila 11 thing was ridiculous itself, too, because Angelo Dundee was his manager, and they were trying to make him to be the new Ali, and every time Attila 11 got beat up, I'm sorry to, like, rant a little bit, but people that listened to the show, like, some of our friends, like Reggie, Killpad, and some others will definitely, you know who we're talking about. There was one time years ago, Attila 11 did the absolute worst Ali impersonation you could have ever heard. He beat someone up on a Fox Sports show, and then they put the camera on him, and he went, I'm a bad man, instead of swinging his fist. And I was in junior high or like early high school. I said, what the hell was that? And Dundee was over there, you know, slapping his shoulder and the whole thing. And I'm like, I can't wait to see this guy get slept because that was awful. And eventually it did happen. You know what I mean? But like,
what do you think of Hellenius?
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, you, sorry.
Okay, yeah. To answer Eric's question, like, and just following along with what you said, yeah. Pat, is that I had told you guys on the last podcast, I'm not too well versed and familiar with like the 70s and the 80s boxing. But I think, you know, the only other person I feel like is a big puncher is like Mike Tyson. And it's like,
yes.
Yeah. And like with Wilder though, it's like he can get you in one punch though. And even, you know, and you know that even though he is, you know, like losing a fight because of whatever reason, he's just, mm-hmm. you know, not a great boxer according to people, even though he won an Olympic medal, like what the fuck? But it's like, you know that it can end at any moment.
Yes.
And with, he proved that with, you know, Luis Ortiz. Luis Ortiz, I love that man. He was doing great. All of a sudden, he's out.
Yeah.
Right? And it's like, you can be getting outboxed completely. And I think Wilder said it best. You know, his opponents have to be perfect for the entire fight. He only has to be perfect for 1 second.
Absolutely.
To throw a punch. And I think not everyone can say that. No. You know, people have to fight the perfect fight to not get hit by him. And even like when you mentioned Usyk, like Usyk has been doing amazing. You know, I love Usyk. He's my favorite fighter. I'm mm-hmm. sorry. I love that man. And you know, I would feel like he loses against Wilder because not only, you know, is he smaller, but I just feel like he'll just get hit. Like it could end like that. Arguably one of the best boxers in the world can just go out in 1 second. Not everybody can say that. Not everybody can say that they are the, you know, the most, boxer, the best boxer in the world can get got by like one punch from this, you know, skinny legged guy.
That's the beauty of heavyweight boxing. Mm-hmm. Last show that we talked, we mentioned Pat Lilly, we mentioned how things can change suddenly, you know? And if you're a pure puncher, like a pure puncher, whether you win or lose, dramatic shit can happen because of, you know, the power you have, all right?
And you believe in it.
And you believe exactly. in it. So let's go back, you know, you can go back to 1979. Ernie Shavers already got his ass kicked by Larry Holmes in their first fight, lost 12-0. Didn't even touch Larry Holmes in their first fight, right? So when they have a rematch, Shavers had knocked out Norton by that point in the first round. And people were like, oh, shit, you know, like, but still. The way Holmes did him the first time, you don't think he's going to do it, but Shavers still has that punch. In all of a sudden, in round seven, he lands the single hardest punch anyone has ever seen thrown in a boxing match, and Holmes drops like he's been shot by a shotgun. Shit happens. Fast forward to 1990 with another pure puncher, you know, Mike Tyson, Buster Douglas. And Buster Douglas is taxing Tyson's ass the entire fight, right? Just boom, 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 boom. What was it? Round eight. Tyson comes at one punch out of nowhere, just dramatically, boom. Douglas, you see his whole body just shudder, and he just drops like,
boosh. Yes, and that is fucking crazy because we see fights where, yeah, you can see even maybe a delayed reaction or how the legs just give out. But with like heavyweight boxing, like one punch,
just
and like it's like a reset everything. Button, or like when you turn off the freaking when you're mad that someone's beating you on the Nintendo and you press like, you know, reset, it's just like that. Yeah, but yeah, with Wilder, you know, that's with heavyweight boxing, period. But Wilder really has that haymaker, that's he has true, that, yes. that just shifting punch that you can that you know it can come at any time. Anytime, and I feel like he gets a lot of crap, and Pat mentioned it, you know, you could, I wish people were a little bit more objective, and they were like, you know what, yes, it's true that these, you know, he's a little excessive with the excuses, but again, we mentioned this in our last, you know, in the last podcast we were together, we're like, mental health, this is a mental breakdown happening in front of us, like a guy who was so pressured by being the best that defeat just crushed them, right? But people just seem to like disregard him. Oh, he's not a great boxer. And I feel like going on what Eric said, like he didn't have to rely on his on anything else. So I think he got comfortable with just having that power and leaving. Mm-hmm. And Tyson Fury was just that one guy that needed not just the power. You needed to also have some boxing to do to him. You had to actually box him and figure him out and adapt. And
even then, he and almost Wilder got him with just the power.
Yeah. And Wilder never had to do that. And I feel like, I think, I'm hoping that this defeat told him that don't fully rely on your power. Like, yes, you have ridiculous fucking power, but let's explore our options. And I feel like because he was an Olympian, obviously in the Olympics, it's not just knocking motherfuckers out, but he was able to adapt and able to work on game plans. And I think hopefully, you know, with his trainer, he's able to go back to that and remember that he can have other options, and yeah. just and the knockout will come just because he just has power. Like, that's just what he has. But let's implement some other, you know, technique, because you have power, so you don't really need to be throwing like super haymakers. But no, yeah, Wilder, I'm excited for him to come back. I'm hoping that the mental struggles are behind him. He does look to be in better spirits, and like Pat mentioned, he's looking great at the gym, right? He's looking great. He's looking like he's actually going back to the basics, and I'm hoping that at least we see maybe for like one round or two, like, and then get him out of there. Like, I would love for him to come out and be like, yes, I'm still that bitch, you know? I would love that for him.
I'll say this. If the main event starts around 12:30, I'm hoping the fight ends around one round, because I'm trying to stay up that late.
I don't pay you overtime either.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I'm not getting overtime. Don't get paid
overtime either, do you?
Yeah, I'm not making no hazard pay on this, so.
You know, I think that I'm not, like, obviously I don't think super high of Robert Hellenius. I don't have any issue with him or anything like that, but I think that's, it's already clear that he's already shown that he's like not really on that.
Yeah,
you know,
he's top. The one that beat Milwaukee, right?
Konotsky or whatever.
He's been around so long. Correct me if I'm wrong. He's been around so long that he's also beaten like guys like Lehman, Brewster, and
like back in like 2012 and 2011.
Well, and that's what I was saying, is that I remember back in the day, like, you know, there was like, he came up right around roughly maybe a little even before David Price. When like, because there was like a group of like really tall heavyweights that were fairly skilled and had some good, you know, amateur experience that were all coming around the same time, and he was one of them. And I remember thinking like, oh whoa, you know, like that's crazy, because, you know, Finnish or whatever he is, I can't remember exactly what he is, I want to say Swedish, Finnish, but a Scandinavian heavyweight who's big, skilled, you know, you don't really see them that often, somebody who can actually get far. Let's see. And I think he's already proven that he's just not really on that level. But then on top of that, you know, the fact that he's had this career resurgence by defeating Adam Kownacki twice. I mean, that says it all, really, with all due respect to Kownacki. Like, we've already seen that he's extremely limited, and even in his power limited. So it's like, you know, if you're using him to stage your revival of your career, that's not a great, you know, that's not a good sign for you. But there is an opportunity there with Deontay Wilder to test him mentally, to test where he is after those defeats to Tyson Fury, to see what kind of fighter he is, whether or not he really even wants to be in there. The problem, of course, with Hellenius is that he does not have like the greatest chin, and Wilder can fucking punch. So we might not even get to find that out. Hellenius might not be the opponent to find that out. But either way, you know, I mean, I think that this is the proper kind of comeback or whatever opponent for Deontay Wilder, because it is going to see, you know, we are going to see where he is. We are going to see whether or not he really wants to be in there. And, you know, one thing that I think that we don't want to see from him, or if you're on his team or management or whatever, that you don't want to see from him, is you don't want to see him struggle for 8 rounds and then score a 9th round knockout.
Yeah.
You want to see him dominate. You want to see him, you know, beat the crap out of him.
Especially not against Hellenius. Like,
exactly.
Struggle against the top guys, not this guy.
Yes.
So,
I don't think that's going to happen, man, because Wilder has already mentioned now that, like, he seemed like you both mentioned, he seems like he's a little bit of a better place. After one fight with a trainer who he's clearly comfortable with, because they've had so much history with him and Malik Scott, he's already said too that, like, he's ready to move on after this fight. After, if he wins it, he should win it. That he wants to move right on to Usyk. And the way things are going now in boxing, that you have Tyson Fury just, you know, making a bunch of comments and other bullshit. You got Joshua in limbo. You got all these other guys are out there. He said clearly, Usyk said that he's ready to fight Wilder next. Wilder just said he's ready to bypass Andy Ruiz, which I'm kind of sad about, because that would be awesome.
That would be awesome.
To go right back to Usyk. But that's a fascinating fight too, because like we've all just mentioned, like it's been said on Twitter by Lou DiBella and other esteemed people. Yes, Usyk can outbox him for 11 and a half rounds. Wilder just has to land one punch, okay? Usyk can't be touched. I mean, yes, he's a great defensive fighter. The guy can move. Yeah, he's a heavyweight
Lomachenko. But Joshua touched him.
Yes, Joshua touched him. Falcon Chisora touched him. You know, he can't be touched. And Wilder is not Mr. Activity, and he's nothing like that. But if he's the type of guy that, you know, I will say this, he's quick twitched, where if he gets going and he can throw wild punches and everything like that, and anything he throws is going to hurt your ass, like, badly. And if he catches some shit, like, Usyk can get caught. And if he's so small, you know, who knows? Wilder will be fascinating against any fighter in the division just because of his power. He has God-given power that ranks him amongst some of the best heavyweights, if not some of the most elite fighters on the planet ever, and pound for pound in history. So that's going to carry him a long way. You know what I mean? And so this is, of course, this is just a comeback fight. Like, do we wish this was on pay-per-view? No, obviously not. It should be on Showtime, maybe, or Fox or whatever. But it is what it is. I'm not going to complain. I'm, you know, who gives a shit? But like,
this is what happens when they run out of slots at the end of the year.
Yep.
Exactly. So, you know, it's just good to have him back, because like, there was a lot of question marks considering his last loss after he lost his Fury again and other stuff. Hey, is he going to come back? What's going to happen to him? Yeah. But he's back. And to have Wilder back in the heavyweight division, regardless of how you feel of him, is a good thing. So,
yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I agree.
Greatly said. Yeah.
I agree. In my opinion, the only other fight on that card between two name fighters, with all due respect to anybody else, of course, is Caleb Plant versus Anthony Durrell in the kind of co-main event or whatever. Look, man, I'm not going to lie to you guys. I'm not a big fan of either of these
fighters. I'm not a fan of either, but Caleb Plant just has that one... He looks like the I had to do it to him guy. Yeah. Vibe. Like, he's just so fucking corny to me. Like, Caleb Plant is like the king of corny to me.
I do not like Caleb Plant.
He's so fucking corny. Him like seeking validation from Canelo like during the fight was fucking
pretty
weird,
good, huh?
To me. I'm pretty good, what the hell's going on?
Lily, you were there at the press conference also too, when Jordan was yelling a bunch of nonsense at Canelo.
I think that's why I don't get accepted to PBC credentials anymore. Wow. But I swear on everything on my life, she said that shit. Like, we were waiting for Caleb Plant to do his little, you know, walk through the little.
Media thing,
and she did ask. She was talking to two other people, and she's like, "Oh my god, like, what is this, Mexico?" Like, she said that, and then she's like, "Oh yeah, look at him, look." And you know, she's like, "Do you want to talk Spanish?" Blah blah. And she also said it in the 24/7. That's why I'm like, why do you guys not believe me? Like, on the 24/7, she said, "Oh, he's over there talking Spanish." Blah blah. Well, he's Mexican, and English is not his main language. Of course, he's gonna be talking Spanish. Like, what are you talking about? But I think that's why PBC doesn't accept me anymore. But I just think he's so corny. Like, he is, you know, he's, my embarrassing fact about myself is that I like Eminem. But just because I like him doesn't mean I don't acknowledge that he's fucking corny. And I feel
Eminem's a talented rapper. You can't deny
he's
that.
He's talented, but he's fucking corny. And I feel like that's what Caleb Plant is to boxing. Like, he's so fucking corny.
Without the Eminem greatness. Of boxing? But yeah, without the greatness.
Well, without the greatness. And then he goes and he like has Twitter beef with like random people tweeting him. Like, my dude,
I do remember that. You
must have like really low self-esteem to like go after some random fucking guy on Twitter. Like, what the fuck? Like, I can get like clapping back. I see Shakur clap back at people all the time. But like, he was like nonstop like exchanging Twitter.
Yeah, he had time.
Like, bro, like, go train. Like, go take care of Jordan, who's pregnant. Or they have their baby. I don't know. Go. What the fuck are you doing? Like, he's so fucking corny to me. And I'm just going to say it. I might get canceled for this later in the years coming. But he's like that typical white guy who wants to be black so fucking bad. Like, with the sneakers. Like, he just, like, he has that I had to do it to him. You know what I'm talking about, right? That meme, I had to do it to him energy. Right. Like, that's what Caleb Plant is. Like, he just wants to be black so fucking bad. And he pisses me. I just don't like him. Darrell's okay. Like, he went against Benavides and he had, like, decent shots here and there. But I just feel like he had already retired. And he got this amazing knockout in the Canelo Plant undercard, right? And I think that gave him like a little bit more of like, oh shit, no, I can still do this and maybe get a payday against Canelo or something. Mm-hmm. But I think that, like, he's not going to win. I think Caleb Plant's going to make it, like, he's going to outbox him. And that's it. I don't think it's going to be an exceptionally entertaining fight. But I think Caleb Plant beats him by decision.
Yeah, it's a couple of names. You know, that's pretty much like, and I think that Caleb Plant's on the way up. I mean, assuming he's on the way up, he might have plateaued or whatever, but Durrell's probably on the way down. And I mean, just the history of all the crap that's happened, you know, the Uzkategi fight. And then I know that Andre is his brother and not the same person, but like, they just, it's like something crazy or weird happens. And every time they fight, 100% of the time, dude. So I'm like, just like every time I see a Durrell is coming up on the schedule, I'm like, like I just, yeah, I draw back.
We've been forced by the Durrells for a long time. And that's the long time. I want to say that's the thing that, again, that always annoys me, even though it's been happening for years. What annoys the shit out of me about the separate, like, you know, playgrounds when it comes to boxers and promoters is that these guys keep on getting recycled, even though they shouldn't be. Anthony Durrell has been, how many times have we seen him now in the main event, and how many times have we been seeing him? Andre Durrell has been around since I moved to New York. I moved here 15 years ago when he was first in the Olympics. So that's a long ass time. Obviously, he's not like quite in the same like sphere as Anthony, who's a little, you know, still being featured. But like, we've been seeing them for a long time. There's other super middleweights out there I'd rather see playing a fight or anything like that. But we can't, because this is the promotional umbrella that they're under. Mm-hmm. And the most relevant name is Anthony Durrell. So yeah, let's match the two together before.
Especially because he was the one who got the belt when Benavidez did coke, right? Like, he's the one
And then Benavidez fought him and beat him for pillar to post. And it's kind of like, what is he going to prove now? Because literally, like you said, all this is going to do is that Plant is going to outbox him, probably, because Durrell is not a guy that's really active himself. And he's older and he's been through a few things. And he's just, it's just a fight that's almost like, you know, yeah, it's two names and they've been bickering back and forth. But you know who's going to win at the end of the day. And the biggest story out of it is that Plant made some Freddy Krueger inspired Nike dunks, you know, off of his boxing shoes for this fight. I've seen them all over social media. They're very cool.
I've not seen that yet. I don't follow him. I muted him, I think. I'm like, shut up.
I mean, look, I don't know about muting people. Like, I just, everybody gets retweeted, you know, like, either they get, what's that word?
Quote tweeted.
Not quote-cheated, like, they recommend you to follow them.
Oh, yeah. I hate that Twitter does that. Like, please, you don't know me. Don't recommend me shit. Like,
yeah. The recommendations are pretty wild on Twitter, but
Yeah, dude, I would imagine that it should be Plant by decision or something like that, but this is not really, it's just not even on paper. It's not a very entertaining fight. It's not a very appealing fight, and it probably won't wind up being a very entertaining fight style-wise either. But actually, looking at the rest of the card, there are a number of unbeaten fighters on this card. There are a number of matchups that look like they should be good, you know, well-matched fights. It's just one of those things where I talked about this before too. And, you know, after just talking some shit about some PBC fighters, I will say, and I have said numerous times, I do like the way that PBC does their matchmaking for a lot of these cards, especially the undercards, where they put a lot of these fighters, they pit a lot of these unbeaten fighters or like an unbeaten fighter against somebody who's lost once or twice, or, you know, not that losses are whatever. We're not getting into that. But point being, they do a good job with the matchmaking, and it looks to be the case on this card as well. There are a number of high quality fighters. Gary Antonio Russell's also going to be fighting on the card. Yeah. He's unbeaten. So, I mean, you know, it should be a lot of fun. The main event, it's just that the main event, and I think the fact that it's pay-per-view is really throwing a lot of people off, which I get, dude. I don't like the pay-per-views either, but it's just the nature of the beast, you know, when you run out of those television slots. But
yeah,
that's how it goes. I'm really looking forward to this weekend, though. There's gonna be a lot of boxing, and on top of that, the way that it's staggered, I'm happy, because, you know, we got from the UK, from Australia, and then from Brooklyn. So it should be nice and spread out. Shouldn't be all happening all at once.
Different time zones.
Yeah. I'm happy about that, at least. But hey, dude, Aris, I appreciate you. Appreciate you coming on here and, you know, doing your thing. But Lily, having you back as a guest, of course, we very much appreciate that. You took the time, and we're sorry that the last time it got screwed up. But, you know, it was all that Queen's doing. We didn't do any of that.
Fuck the Queen.
Bam! There's where it is.
Can I say that on YouTube? You could take this part out so you don't lose monetization.
Say the what point. You do. I don't know if that'll do it.
We ain't sponsored by nobody. I don't get it. Speak your mind.
What are they gonna do? She's dead. What is she gonna do? No, you know, it is what it is, dude. It got screwed up last time, but we made up for it. So anyway, thank you everybody who listened in. If you listen in via the podcast apps, we always appreciate that, and leave a rating or a comment, also appreciated. But if you watched on YouTube, subscribe. Thank you very much. Leave a reply and we'll reply if we can. But we're also on social media. The Knuckles and Gloves podcast is on Facebook and Instagram, but individually, we're probably more on Twitter, a little bit more than any of that stuff. Lily Ulloa is on Twitter as Queer Desmadre. That's Queer DESMADRE. And then my buddy Eris Pina is on Twitter as Punch Zone Eris. Me, Patrick Connor, I'm there as Patrick M. Connor, not Patrick Mick Connor, despite what motherfuckers are saying. I swear to God. No. Yeah, so say hi on Twitter, because we'll say hi back. But hey, thanks so much, you two. Appreciate it.
Absolutely.
All right. Later, everybody.